and welcome back. This is episode 10 of the podcast, and in this week's episode, we're looking at whether or not the lens is actually the important part of the whole camera system. We're revisiting Broncolor versus Godox, having now been Broncolor for longer than Godox, or what was Bowens. We're going to have a quick chat about lifestyle. We're going to talk about IT, upkeep, and computer specifications for modern cameras. My life after Adobe, creating a portfolio on a budget, and we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Teddy. So, first things first, let's dive into the computer thing, because this is literally what we've just been doing. So we're recording these podcasts back to back today. So between last week's and this week's, I've had a haircut. But in that time, Rob has fixed my Mac because it had gone slow. The hard drive was randomly filling up.
Yeah, there was a bunch of caches and hidden extras just lounging around somewhere in it that were doing absolutely nothing other than slowing you down, really.
They were slowing me down a lot. Yesterday was quite frustrating. So what did you do to make me eat fast again? What was the...
We installed a bit of software called Daisy Disk.
Yep.
Which I've used for years. I highly recommend it.
How much did it cost? Was it 10 quid?
£9.99 in the UK, which, you know, by any metric is a bargain.
Yeah, less than a pint in London.
Definitely less than a pint in London. And then so we basically went hunting for hidden files, of which there was a better part of 300 gigs sat there doing nothing.
And that's taken, what, 4 years building that up?
Yeah.
So my computers I use, this laptop here is the 13-inch M1 Mac Pro with 16 gig of RAM, but with only a half a terabyte hard drive. This was the only laptop available of M1 when I bought it, because...
They were hot property.
They were hot property, and I needed something faster than the previous quad core, which was great up until Blackmagic and 100 megapixels.
Yeah. That was the end of my MacBook Pro as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And I think the reason I actually bought the main computer, which is again an M1, that is the Mac Mini, and it's 16 gig of RAM, 1 terabyte SSD. I bought that because I bought the Blackmagic, and I had to buy it because even making proxy files on the old quad core was a nightmare. But I think what's interesting is I get a lot of questions about, like, which computer do I need, which thing do I use, and all the rest of it. There are some prerequisites. I'll let you talk about the techie side of things, Rob, because the reason you're here is because I don't know. But there's a few things as a photographer or videographer in the commercial world that you need. And the first one is Apple. It has to be Apple because lots of the stuff we use as industry standard only works on Apple. Like, even if you don't have an Apple phone, you can't use Capture Pilot on your phone. If you've got anything, I don't know, Windows or whatever they're called, Android. Like, it has to be Apple. And the whole ecosystem works well. The AirDrop's brilliant. My show notes, I've just copied and pasted on my phone, or copied on my phone and pasted onto my laptop, because you can do that between stuff, which is great. We can send files from when we're shooting in here wirelessly into there pretty easily on AirDrop, which is good. It just works. Capture One is made for Apple, pretty much. You can use it on Windows, but it's not the same functionality. There's a few other things like Chronosync and stuff, which is just Apple only. So it has to be Apple. That's the first and foremost. Whether you like Apple or not, that is industry standard.
Yeah, you will trigger the PC master race out there.
I know. And what you can, of course, use a PC. It's just not ideal. Like, if you've got a PC, don't go, I've got to go and buy a Mac now. Yeah.
In terms of things running well on set, being smooth and efficient, Apple works really, really well.
Yeah, it's the perfect ecosystem. The next thing I needed was a decent-sized internal hard drive. This one's too small on the laptop, but there was no 1 terabyte available at the time. It was only half. But a 1 terabyte hard drive is the minimum requirement of internal storage, because we shoot internally. When you're shooting 100 megapixels at 16-bit, it doesn't take long. It doesn't take long to fill it up. And then RAM, I just bought the most you could get into it, which was 16.
Yeah.
You could get 8 or 16, I think.
Because, again, one of Apple's quirks, nothing can be upgraded in terms of RAM. So you have to buy the maximum specification you can straight off the bat. You have solutions for storage. You have no solutions for RAM.
Exactly. Now, I am editing on this 6K raw video footage. And I'm editing 100 to 150 megapixels, 16-bit raw files, either from the Phase IQ 3150 or my Fuji. And it keeps up, I think. You have a much better machine. I'll let you talk about yours in a bit, but it does the job. So you can buy an M1 Mac Mini for £600 secondhand.
Yeah, and it's for that money, what a piece of kit.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So it has some drawbacks, though. For photos, not really. You can do all the photo stuff. I don't have any issues with it. But rendering these podcasts out, these will take, what, 2.5-3 hours per render, which could be an issue for certain types of work. But for me, I render overnight. So we'll finish these at the end of the day, hit render, and by the time I come in tomorrow, they're done.
Yeah. I mean, we've just edited episode 9 while you were off getting your fresh cut.
Yeah, fresh fade.
And it edits well, smoothly. You have to turn off the, you know, any adjustment layers and grades and such. But again, we just went straight off the SSDs, didn't even transfer anything.
No.
So all of it's running through one Type-C cable straight directly into the computer, editing the drive straight off. And everything, in terms of speed while editing, everything there was working fine. And that was a mix of two 4Ks and a 6K footage mixed together. No proxy files built because that takes long. It really, in terms of efficiency and time working, they're perfectly acceptable. Where that you could potentially have an issue is if you're working on set. I mean, if you remember when we were working for ESL Sports, and they needed the footage like within minutes of it being dropped.
Exactly,
that would not have been the machine.
No,
to be using in that particular scenario.
Beastly.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, so that's just something to consider. And but in your use case, again, we just stack them up and leave it rendering overnight, and they're done by the time you get in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't slow you down one iota.
No, it makes no difference. I could buy a better computer, and my life wouldn't change.
No,
I don't think.
Nothing you do would be dependent on that.
If, for example, we were shooting video on set and they wanted graded renders doing in real time for sign-off...
Completely different story.
We'd bring in a DIT station with some beast of a machine. But you have a beast of a machine. Explain to people who know about computers what you're editing on.
Well, I'm editing on what's affectionately known as a Hackintosh. Which is a PC tower that's running macOS.
Yep.
Running macOS for all of the reasons we mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Compatibility. And again, as I have done, brought my machine in to work on here, you know, we have to be in the same ecosystem.
Yeah, we did that Doritos job, didn't we?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I remember, I've been on Mac since 2008, and this is my first non-Mac, my first hack, if you like. And it teaches you a lot about everything. Now, I will say this. If you are not a nerd at like level 47, please do not attempt to build a Hackintosh. They operate much like a real Mac from the point of view that dog is doing something ridiculous.
So yeah, you can't see this on podcast or on the video, but the dog is currently humping his bed in the corner.
We are going to have to get a teddy cam set up for future.
I don't know if we're allowed to put that on YouTube. He is, that bed is getting it.
At least we can choose to that. Maybe for the Patreon.
Yeah, that'd be on the Patreon. If you want to see Teddy getting up to no good with his bed. He's got a panda bear at home, which is the same size as him. Like a teddy bear one, and that's his girlfriend.
Yeah, poor old Ducky getting it today, though.
Yeah, he's not very nice to Pandy at home. He's a bit rough. Sorry, carry on.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. So Hackintosh, much like a real Mac, works perfectly until it doesn't.
Yeah.
And when it goes wrong, it will go biblically wrong. But then that's exactly how my experience has been with real Macs since 2008. So there's nothing sort of different there.
They work until they don't.
They don't. But again, the main thing for me was upgradability. You know, I spent similar to what I would have spent on pretty decent Mac at the time.
Yeah.
But then I've just upgraded the graphics in it for £500, I think it cost me to upgrade it. Literally almost quadrupled the performance.
So what sort of spec does yours have?
So again, I'm running an i9-9900K Intel processor. Sort of 5 gig on all cores, 8 cores, 16 thread. I've got 64 gig of pretty fast RAM, so there's plenty of RAM there. And I now, in terms of graphics, now have a pair of RX 6800 GPUs in it.
So how much faster is your machine than mine when you come to use mine compared to yours?
Right, so in terms of the actual editing, it's a bit smoother in terms of what you're doing. Now, in terms of render speed, completely different planet.
Yeah.
Like, yours was, we were looking at earlier, to... Yours is rendering something in the 8 to 12 frames per second for these podcasts, for the, yeah, these gravy podcasts. Now, for a similar setup on mine, it will be exporting at something in the region of 140 to 180 frames per second.
That's nearly as fast as mine does audio only.
Yeah. So it's fast. So for me, that's important to have something that renders. But the main thing for me that's completely not relevant to you is 3D rendering.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm using Cinema 4D with Octane as my render engine. Now, that's completely GPU-based renderer. So GPU performance is everything. And rendering can take so long, especially when, you know, when you have reflection, shadows, everything else you've got set up in the scene. So to have something that can render something photo real in the space of 30 to 40 seconds is extremely desirable. That would not be the case on a...
Yeah,
and
in terms of speed and stuff, the time when we used your computer in the studio was when we were delivering to Doritos in real time with renders.
Yeah.
With, I think we've got speed ramps and like slow-mo and all the sort of stuff, and we had to be able to go, render, done, go.
Yeah.
It was like seconds of rendering.
Because again, you were still on your...
I was on the quad-core.
Your 2016 quad-core i7.
Now, one of the things that does come up with these computers and stuff like that is that people talk about time being money. So I could, how much would it cost me to go and get like a fully spec'd out Mac Studio-ish?
Seven grand.
If I bought that £7,000 computer, I would save time, but not time when I'm doing anything.
No, you would only save the time that you don't use anyway.
I'd be saving time whilst I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
And I'd be £7,000 lighter of pocket. Yeah. So yes, it'd be faster. Yes, it'd be better. Would I make more money by being better at doing it? No, absolutely not.
Unless you bring in a 3D motion graphics artist.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it starts to make money. Yes.
How much are we paying this person? How much time are they sitting around not able to work because it's crashing or whatever it is? Yes, we need to spend more money. But yeah, so that's computers. But I think it's a boring subject for some people, but a necessary subject for all photographers.
Especially, I mean, now in the digital world, you can't do anything without one.
No.
You know, it's impossible. There's none of this, straight off the card, JPEG, there you go, mate.
Yeah.
You know, good luck with that in the commercial world.
Yeah, yes, no, it's absolutely
not going to happen.
And I think this, you know, we're going to talk about lenses next. And I recently, and you helped me with the edit for this, actually, I think, did a video comparing my Fuji to my Canon.
Yes, I did.
And everyone's like, yeah, but they're using different lenses. And, you know, the lens is what matters. So for those who don't know, the saying is always like you should always invest in glass because camera bodies come and go, but glass is pretty much the same. And I used to be a big advocate of that. I've always had reasonably good lenses, I'd say.
Yeah. Even the 90mm gold ring Canon that you used to use for portraits?
Yeah, that was an H5 1.8. Decent enough lens, could have bought the 1.2. It's a better lens.
Yeah.
But
well, better. I would argue different.
Different.
I would argue, unless you're shooting it below 1.8, it makes no sense to own it.
Yeah, no, quite. But it's an interesting thing. Is like, you know, if I put the Canon behind the Mamiya lens, which is a good lens, mm-hmm. Decent. It's not the best lens, but it's a good lens. Would it be as good as the Fuji? And the answer is no.
No, because the sensor is far superior. The
Fuji sensor
and
is
color depth.
Color depth, sensor size, resolution. And to a certain point, there is a point where having a better lens on a worse camera body does make it better. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, there's a point where a better camera body on a worse lens is actually better. And it depends a lot on what you're shooting. And I think when we were shooting portraits at f2, 2.8, that sort of thing, a good lens did matter because shooting wider open like pushes the limits of the design of the lens.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're shooting like me, f10 to f16, I don't think the lens makes that much difference. Whether I shoot on, I mean, in my portfolio, I've got stuff shot on a 100mm gold ring Canon, which is like £200.
That's the macro lens, wasn't it?
Yeah. Still shot on the Zeiss Milvus, which is a, £1,200 lens?
Yeah.
And stuff shot on the Mamiya Seiko, which cost me £90, which is the lens I use today, which would have cost more back in the day. It was a premium lens, would have been more like maybe over £1,000 in today's money. But I don't think I know. And you can talk about the drawing of the image and the rendering of the image and all the rest of it, but I'm starting to feel like the lens makes less difference than I used to feel it did. What do you?
Well, I think it's the whole term is misunderstood, and here's what I will say. Now, a good lens will have a longevity, and this is the important bit, of 20, 30 years, let's be honest. Camera body will not last 30 years at all. And I think this is why people say invest in glass, not because it makes the most difference, but because that lens will be perfectly usable for the next 30 years, as long as you stay within, you know, that the mount still fit and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas your camera body, there will come a point, I mean, I'd say every 10 years, and I'm saying that because I've owned a 6D for 10 years now, that after 10 years or so, you're going to be looking to want to upgrade that camera body just because things have moved on, you know. So that's where you look at the thousands in camera bodies. And again, lenses running in the thousands, but you will have those lenses potentially for much longer than you will ever own a camera body.
Yeah, and lenses don't devalue as much.
No.
If you buy a secondhand lens today, it's probably going to be worth about the same in 10 years' time.
I mean, when you go vintage lens shopping, you know, there's bargains to be had all over the place, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I was working on a short film Monday, Tuesday of this week, and we discussed what they wanted to do. And it's a really interesting film based around the concepts of neurodivergence and different points of view. So we busted out the old vintage lens kits. I mean, we shot most of it on a 20mm Zeiss Flectagon from the 60s.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, I mean, we were shooting, it must have been last year now, an ad campaign. It was like a week-long campaign. And I was using my 5DS with the Mamiya lens on my big rig for most of the still life stuff. And then we had to suddenly do some like run and gun shooting for the campaign, which was like me hand holding a camera. So I had to get a zoom lens out. I just picked up the 24-105, which is inferior in many, many ways to many, many primes.
Yeah.
No one could tell the difference.
I can't think of a prime that's actually worse than that in terms of metrics.
Yeah, like it's the worst lens you can buy of a premium quality.
And it's insanely boring. It's the most boring, blandest lens.
Does it all though?
But if you can only take one lens on a job, I still maintain that's the
24-105. I was at F11 for the whole shoot. Whether I was on that lens, an 85, 100mm, a 24, the images would look the same.
Yeah.
And sure, you can go and pixel peep and look at these weird, like, oh, the chromatic aberration. Well, the colour fringing.
It's not sharp and it's only F4.
And I think once you start bokeh hunting, once you're focusing on how good the bit of the photograph that isn't in focus is, then you've got a problem.
Yeah. I mean, I've owned that lens from day one. And again, very, very useful. I mean, and again, if you want to run a gun that does everything for hybrid shooters, it's got image stabilisation.
Yeah.
And for video, you're not going to see much difference at all. It resolves in as much detail as most modern video cameras will do.
Yes.
And that's your one walkabout lens, that would be the one that you would pick. And I would maintain that most people would be better off owning the 24-105 F4 over the 24-70 F2.8.
24-70 is a dog of a lens because it's not long enough.
Yeah, the telly isn't telly enough.
Yeah, and the wide isn't really that wide.
And, you know, does one stop make that much difference in light, really?
Yeah,
I would argue I would rather have that 70-105 focal range than
agreed.
One more stop of light.
Agreed. And I think, like, if I was to advise someone on, like, if they're going, I want to see photography, lots of different types and all the rest of it, I go 5D Mark II, 24-105 F4 Mark I.
Yeah, I mean, as a run and gun starter kit, happy days.
Yeah, I could shoot most of my work with a 24-105. I mean, it's great having a technical camera, but like.
And again, because it's the lens itself will stop down to f22. If you're at f16, you're well away from the dreaded diffraction.
Diffraction. Well, I get some diffraction merch made.
That could be a new thing. Instead of bulk,
diffraction. Every time I mention f16, there's a comment somewhere on my YouTube videos. What do you do about diffraction? How do you handle the diffraction? I'm like, I don't even notice.
Yeah, but at a lens that stops down to f36, there is no diffraction at f16.
Yeah, but I've even stopped them all the way down before. And still don't. Like, I'm sure it's there. I don't notice it. I don't even know if I could spot it in an image. I don't think it matters. Much like light. Now, this is where I do think it makes a difference. So lenses, I've always been a big fan of lenses and having nice lenses, exotic lenses. But I don't think the difference, for example, between the Gold Ring Canon 100mm and the Zeiss Milvus Macro Planar 100mm is that great. Or, I don't know, the Canon and all the way to my Cambo setup is that great compared to the difference in quality of light. Now, I've been a Broncolor user since 2017. And prior to that, so I've done half my career on Boeings and half my career on Broncolor. From very old Boeings and very old Broncolor through to very modern Boeings and very modern Broncolor. So Boeings was always made in the Godox factory. I don't know if I'm allowed to say what happened, but someone got dicked and Boeings is gone. And now you have Godox. So it's Boeings is Godox stuff. It's the same tech.
Yeah.
It's the same mount. It's still called a Boeings S mount, yeah, even though Boeings is gone. But Boeings is like the British branch of it. And Boeings was like, oh, it's like Godox, wasn't it? It was the good, stable, suitable for everybody.
Affordable workhorse,
yeah. I've got Boeings, I've got a what? Quad 3000 pack. That's probably what, from the 90s?
Hmm.
It's done 150,000 flashes. I've got four heads for it. That's my backup. And it's also what I use one very specific niche modifier from, which I can't put a Broncolor head on because it'll blow up the glass inside it.
Yeah,
It's a cool Fresnel I've got, but yeah, it does a good job. The Broncolor stuff, on the other hand, I don't know if you've noticed the difference between them when editing, but
it's mainly in terms of editing a single image, no, but when you have to composite three or four images together, the color consistency is just so much better.
Yeah, and I think you've just done an edit where not only have you had to composite for a frame, you've had to composite for a frame and then make a GIF of composite. Yeah. So it's like five photos per image in a six image.
So one of them was nearly 20 images.
Yeah, 20 images. And there is absolutely zero deviation.
Yeah, the colour temperature is bang on consistent shot to shot.
Now, I've seen a video recently looking at speed lights where they found that the Godox was the most consistent. It was a F-stoppers one for the different speed lights. But in terms of flash, I mean, even Pro Photo is not as good. We shot on Pro Photo for a big campaign recently, and there were some deviations in the colours. But again, if you're one shot, one frame person, not an issue, but we do a lot of composite work and a lot of GIFs and a lot of like stop motion, and it's a real pain in the behind.
To the point where that brought you to using manual aperture lenses.
Yes. So for a while, every time you shoot a normal lens, the aperture opens and closes. An F10 could be anywhere from F8 to F16 frame to frame, and it's never the same. So there's a bit of a trick where you hold down the depth field preview button, detach the lens so it doesn't reopen again, but that's always a bit risky having a non-attached lens on your camera.
Especially when you've got something expensive like a Zeiss.
Yeah, exactly. But now I just use a manual lens where the aperture is fixed in place, doesn't move. And then between that and Broncolor, it is sweet. I would spend, given the money to spend on stuff, I would spend the most amount of money on modifiers, specifically reflectors. I think you can cheap out on softboxes a little bit more. But a good quality reflector, so my reflectors are £200 each, £250 each, compared to a £10 Boeings one or Godox one, is huge. The next thing I spend money on would be the lights.
Then
decent flash heads and packs. Then I'd spend the money on softboxes and that sort of thing, where you don't have to spend as much to get good quality. Probably go Godox quality with softboxes, then lenses, then camera bodies at the very bottom of the, whereas I think most people buy the camera body with the most money.
Yeah, but it just because it tends to cost more. I mean, like if you look at the average cost of a pro lens is somewhere between £1,000 to £2,000.
Yeah.
And again, there's exceptions to every rule. Yes, you know, there's Zeiss lenses costing, you know, £10,000-£12,000.
Yeah, do you remember those Otis lenses?
Yeah, about £8,000.
Yeah, no one buys them anymore, do they?
No. I mean, again, it's a very specific customer at that price range.
Yes.
In the same way that you're not going to take the Ferrari to the 7-Eleven just to get a pint of milk high, which is just not the right tool for the job.
I sometimes do. Nip out my Ferrari to the Shell garage.
Yeah, but you are bougie like that. So that's to be fully expected. So I think, you know, £1,000 to £2,000 is a good, I think, metric of the lenses most people will buy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you have a lot of sort of choice within that.
Yeah, but I...
Whereas an average camera body is, again, something that you would pair with said £1,000 to £2,000 lens is somewhere in the £4,000 to £7,000 is where you're at for camera bodies nowadays. So proportionally, you could buy two lenses for the price of one camera body.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, like, if I look at my breakdown of costs, so one light with a reflector is worth 13,000. My camera body's worth, what was it, £4,000, £5,000?
About that, yeah.
My lens cost me £90, but say brand new, it would have been like £1,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, it goes light, camera, lens, and cost.
And then you consider that you've spent four times as much on the camera body as the lens,
yeah,
knowing you're going to get three times less longevity out of it.
I know, and I know that when I'm done with the lens, it'll be worth the same.
Yeah.
And when I'm done with my camera, it'll be worthless. Like last time I sold a camera, it was like for £200, having spent a lot on it many moons ago.
I think the longest time you spent with the camera system was the 5D Mark II.
Yeah, I got my money's worth out of that bad boy. I've still got it in here.
Yeah.
I think it's on the desk or something.
It'll be part of the Ciccino wing of the museum.
Yeah, yeah.
Once it's set up and running.
But yeah, I just want to quickly touch on lenses. I'm going to make a YouTube video about lenses and showing the difference of having the same lens and a different camera body. Because I think I have got enough kit to build a Cambo to do each camera body in each.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, even sort of as a bareback test, you can take the 5D Mark II, one of your functional ones.
Yeah.
And then compare that to a DSR. And, you know, which is basically the same camera system, just to show you the difference now that the camera body is making.
Yeah.
They both kind of got the same color science, et cetera, but vastly different sensors.
Yes, yeah, I think I've got a Cambo I can build. I've got so many spare Cambo bits. I just get in touch with Cambo, actually. I've got loads of their stuff here. I've got a massive boom arm behind me, which they sent me and I've done absolutely nothing with. So sorry, Mr. Cambo.
No, we did put a light on it, remember?
Oh, we did put a light on it. We're good. We've fulfilled our...
I need the smallest light as high up and as far away as I can get it from the product. I remember the shoot.
Yes, we did, actually. We did need a lot of space. But yeah, talking about money and stuff, I just want to, you know, my segues are seamless. Go into creating a portfolio on a budget. So someone was like, how do you create a portfolio on a budget? It costs so much money to do. And I think perhaps I have missold how expensive test shoots are. So some of my test shoots are ludicrously expensive, like thousands and thousands. And it's quite stressful because I've got to get something good because I've just spent more than a brand new car on it. And that is stressful. Other test shoots, I put a sweet on a piece of paper and take a picture by myself. Or the Coca-Cola bottle, which I just posted on Instagram, which is the reflection from the light going through a Coca-Cola bottle onto a background. All I needed was a sheet of white paper and a Coca-Cola bottle. Obviously the camera kit, but like I assume you have a camera already if you're doing this. So it doesn't have to be expensive shoots. And it doesn't have to be complex shoots either. I try and mix it up a bit. So my next test shoot I do will have to be super easy because I've not shot for ages. And I think you've been on test shoots that have been complex with me.
I've been on all of them again. Where you have, even on a test shoot, two assistants,
yeah,
a stylist, a designer, and you've got, and me,
yep.
Even at that level. So, you know, there's a whole bunch, you know, it's effectively like being on a commercial shoot.
Yes.
Without you getting paid anything. This is basically...
I'm spending money at an outstanding rate.
And you always... the other thing you tend to do as well when you've got a number of people in is that you always buy something nice for lunch. It's like,
have a good lunch.
Grand kitchen today.
Yeah. Can have a good lunch. Good lunch is key. Lunch and beers afterwards. But yeah, that's always important. But yeah, you've been with me on small test shoots where it's been just me?
Yeah, the Shiny Sweets. I'm not sure if we can mention the brand, but...
The Shiny Sweets.
Quality Street.
Oh, yes. Yes. You know, we can mention the brand. Quality Streets, which was a test shoot. I just did an image by myself, mostly to test the camera, to be honest, rather than creative. But it still went...
Yeah, because it was an exploration of shadows, that, wasn't it? How hard you could make the shadow and...
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, loads of my portfolio has been shot with just me in the studio and no one else. A couple of sheets of paper from Hobbycraft. And I think the mistake people make, for example, is if you're going to shoot drinks. So I photographed a bottle of Coca-Cola. It costs like £1. Someone will be like, well, I need to photograph something. I'm going to buy a £55 bottle of vodka.
Water looks the same.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh, this bottle's really cool. No one cares. Only you care.
That's fine. And if you drink that anyway, wait till we've finished it and then fill it with water.
Yeah, or photograph it, then drink it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, I mean, we've done expensive things as well. We shot Guinness and had to like pour away 50 cans of Guinness, which is annoying. But then still, it's only what, 60, 70 quid?
Yeah, I mean, it's still money. And I think a good tip, just having been speaking about budgets and lenses and various other things and lighting, is a lot of your portfolio is shot with one light.
Yep.
And so if you have one good light instead of 12 trying to do the most technical fancy lighting.
Yeah, which everyone hates.
Just have one light and just keep it classy.
Yeah, simple's good. Simple's easy.
Importantly, keeps your cost down for kit.
Yeah. Don't go and rent loads of expensive kit and stuff. Whatever you've got is fine. Like, as long as you've got like at least the quality of a 5D Mark II.
Yeah.
I think that's like...
Which, I mean, what are they now? Like 250 quid at CEX?
250 quid. I
mean,
bargain.
What a camera. I mean, why would you buy the three-digit new one for 500 quid when you could buy that?
I know. It's nuts, isn't it? But, you know, that is what it is.
And that's another tip on a budget. Don't buy a brand new camera.
Don't ever buy a brand new camera. It's not buying a brand new car. It's just, you're going to lose money. Like, unless you've got loads of money to lose, in that case, go for it. But if you're feeling tight, or if, like me, you are tight, then don't buy
like me, you literally have no money.
Yes, yeah. Going out making that cash at night. It's but yeah, you know, that's, you know, a good thing. And talking of savings, oh, my segues are so good today. Life after Adobe. I deleted my Adobe subscription, which has somewhat come back to haunt us today, because I didn't realise we used Adobe Audition to record the audio. So Rob's had to sign himself in, because we are going to find a workaround for this.
For legal reasons, I probably didn't do that.
No, Rob did not sign himself in. Someone signed themselves in. Maybe this week gets deleted. But it was a bit of an issue today. We couldn't record the podcast because I've deleted Adobe. Are we going to be able to find a different version of something to do? Maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I am now 50 quid a month better off. And someone's probably going, well, why does that matter if your light costs 12 grand? It matters. Every penny saved matters. And I just hate Adobe. I just feel like they're constantly slightly screwing me.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a case to be argued for that. But no more than any big corporation, in fairness.
So, no, exactly.
They're no worse than anyone else.
No, I agree. I just think their pricing's insane.
Unless you're using a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to, as you know, edit on Adobe. I used Premiere Pro since about 2010, up until the point where it became unusable around about 2019, really. I think every video editor out there will understand that by the time you've finished, you know, an average 5 to 10 minute video, it's my 5 minute video _recovered_14 is the file you will end up rendering out.
Yeah.
It was just, honestly, it's impossible. And it just comes a point where she's like, I can't work like this. So I occasionally use After Effects because I'm not familiar enough yet with Fusion inside Resolve, which is extremely powerful, but I'm not that familiar. And it's one of those, sometimes, especially when you're in a bit of a rush and you're on a deadline, it's like, I could do that in 5 minutes in After Effects. It'd probably take me an hour to work out.
Yeah,
to do it. So do you know what? I'll just do it in 5 minutes and I'll worry about that later. And the worrying about that later bit doesn't tend to happen very often. But as an NLE, Resolve has been absolutely brilliant. And of course, there's a free version of that. So any video editors out there, I would rather 100% edit on the free version of Resolve than the paid version of Premiere Pro. I feel a bit lopsided now in terms of my spend with Adobe. So I'm the same. I have the whole cloud, you know, £59 a month or whatever it is these days. Now, when I was using, as I do on the daily, Photoshop, InDesign, Illustrator, I was using Adobe Audition, I was using After Effects, I was using Premiere Pro. I'm like, do you know what? That's actually a reasonable value for money package, that now. But now that I don't use any of the video tools anymore, and I'm literally paying... effectively 20 quid per bit of software for the graphic design tool.
Yeah.
It seems a bit stiff.
Yeah, that's what I feel about it. Like, there should be some sort of like pick and mix option, because I went from, like you, using InDesign, all the video editing, audio editing, media encoder quite regularly, Lightroom, and then Lightroom got changed to Capture One. And then all the video stuff went to DaVinci. Mm-hmm. And InDesign just stopped working for what I needed it for. So I just used Google Slides. And it's a website.
I mean, they used to do it back in the day when you could actually buy it.
Yeah.
You had the CS or Creative Suites, as they were known back then. And you could buy, there was the graphic design bundle, there was the web tool bundle with Dreamweaver and such things. Not that ever worked, but it was there. And then you had the videographer's bundle, and you just picked which one you want, or they did the master suite, which was everything.
Yeah.
Now, what they've basically done is remove that choice from you, and you buy either one piece of software or you have to have the whole master suite. You can't just have the graphic design suite. And I think that's unfortunate, because that would be better for a lot of people. I think there'd be a lot less hatred spat towards Adobe if, as a graphic designer, you could just buy the tools you want at a reasonably priced budget, say 30 quid a month.
Yeah.
And it's like 30 quid a month then for this. But if you wanted a bit of the other thing now, actually, I can have all of it for £60. Now that seems reasonable value.
Yeah.
And I don't think people would complain about that.
So no, I agree.
If Adobe's listening, consider that.
So I would pay a little bit for it, but it's not what they're asking for. Although the next thing which is going on my list of, like, I try and decrease my overheads all the time, MailChimp. I pay £4,500 a year for MailChimp. I've got a big mailing list.
Significant.
It's a big mailing list, and I send a lot of mailers. But it is a significant amount of money, and it just seems insane. Yeah, that's going.
Yeah.
I think Flowdesk is the one we're currently looking at. But anything which is less than that, like that, that's...
Well, I mean, just two things there. You've gone from one extreme to the other. You save £50 a month by not subscribing to the whole cloud for Adobe.
Yeah.
And then you know, you can potentially save yourself, you know, £4,000 a year by you changing your mailer. You know.
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, look at every increment of your costs and figure out every line by line, is this where I need to be? Is this what I'm doing?
Yeah, just save £200 a year on my phone bill. That's gone down. Same service.
Mm-hmm.
Just less. So yeah, got to keep those things down. Got to keep everything sort of going, in a functionally but affordable way. And it's so easy with these subscriptions just to keep buying them.
Oh yeah, and people forget. You know, it's one of those. I forgot. What's this? Oh, that's Flickr.
Yeah, I've got to work out what this $11.99 on Apple Pay is that keeps coming out of my account. I keep forgetting. But yeah, I mean, you know, alongside that, another seamless. In we go. It is a small bit on lifestyle, because someone was asking me about my puppy and how Teddy's doing. I don't know if we can, like, chop some Teddy footage into this for the YouTube people. Teddy's adorable. Teddy was a bit of a dick during his land shark era, where he just literally just went around biting everyone's ankles. But he seems to have calmed down with that now. He's mostly humping things and being very cuddly on the sofa. But he's very good. But what is good about having a dog? He comes to work with me. He's here now. He's living his best life. He's chewing an antler at the moment. Is that before work, I go for a walk in the park by myself with a dog. And after work, I go for a walk by myself with a dog. We bump into people and make, you know, polite, meaningless chit-chat. And he often humps other dogs. But, you know, it's quite a nice thing to be doing before and after work. And I am a big advocate for the sort of, like, lifestyle around performance, coming from a sports background. So I don't drink the night before a shoot, because even one pint slightly impairs your decisions. I exercise at least once a day. I have a slightly better than average diet, maybe. Probably not. But I keep in shape. Like, I actually think the way I do it is probably not healthy. But, like, so far today, I've had a protein shake and a green supplement, you know. But I do think that the lifestyle around being a creative is important. And I see a lot of creatives who live that creative life of going out, getting hammered, partying. And although they might make good work, I don't think they have the consistency when they live that sort of, and this is coming from someone who did live that sort of lifestyle, probably when we first met.
Yeah, I would say. Fair to say.
I did partake in the party. I did like the party. But I think, like, I was probably very inconsistent in my quality of work back then.
Yeah, but it's so easy to get sort of sucked into that. I mean, for example, when you went down to London the other week to meet your agent and a few other bits.
Yeah.
That's just how the industry is. It's like, it is. You know, it's impossible to avoid, honestly.
I did not feel so good the next day. That day, I think the next 2 days were right off after going to see Pete.
Yeah, and then the buyer's remorse when you get your bill from the alcohol that you consumed at London prices.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, round's on me. And you're like,
yeah, 150 quid a round. Yeah, and we went out for lunch and I got back at 4 a.m. And yeah, I did not feel good. But yeah, I don't do that the day before shoot anymore. But I do think there's a lot to be said for having, like, I wake up at the same time every day. Now that I have a dog, even tomorrow, which is Sunday, where I'm off, still got to wake up at the same time because he's going to need to go to the toilet. So I have to go to bed at the same time. I can't sit up till 2 a.m. watching Luther. Yeah. But yeah, I just, you know, just thought I'd quickly touch on that, 'cause someone was asking about the dog. And I don't know, do you have a routine on days off?
Sorry?
Do you have days off?
Days off. I'm not.
So this is your day off, isn't it?
This is my day off, yeah. Actually, in fact, this is my day off. I mean, days off tend to be a rare thing, and they tend to be like catch-up days, you know, with, you know, dare I say it, household chores.
Life admin, and likes.
You know, it's a difficult thing. You know, I'm trying to get myself into a routine, especially as, you know, I work a number of days from home.
Yeah.
You know, where I do, you know, sort of stop and make a point of having a lunch break.
Yeah.
You know, just even if it's just a, you know, a protein yogurt and a couple of Baby Bells, which is apparently the power lunch of champions.
Oh, we have Baby Bells a set now. I love a Baby Bell and a mini pork pie.
40 grams of protein right there.
So yeah,
I'm get that done. So, you know, it's just trying to get something resembling a healthy routine. Now, unlike yourself, I do like alcohol.
Yeah, well, I'm not against it.
You know what I mean? And my routine has been, now I was told by my doctor that I need to drink more, which is an absolutely fabulous position to be in. I don't think he meant...
Not more Stella's.
More often. I think the same amount more often. I think he meant try and spread it out through the week. You know, because I tend to drink one day a week, pretty much, which will be tonight. And I have a good drink on a Saturday night.
You know, we've gone out drinking before, haven't we?
We have, many times.
Yeah, it's an occasion, it's an event.
Yeah. What was it PBT said? It said, going out drinking Rob's, not for beginners.
No. Yeah, it's not the first thing you want to try, is it? You want to probably work your way up to that.
No, we've ruined a few on the way up, haven't we? So.
Yes, there's a few assistants who are no longer with us.
So I mean, that tended to be my routine is, you know, I have one day a week and I don't drink for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
You know, because again, you know, I can wake up with a clear head, know exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be usually one day where, you know, either getting up isn't critical, like tomorrow is is an actual day off as it stands at the moment, unless you come up with something in the next sort of hour or so.
Yeah, but hopefully not.
and that tends to work for me. Then I get my day of just reset the clock and, you know, try and get my mind back in a state, you know, sort of decompress and get it straight in my head what I need to be doing this week on each day, because my week's carefully planned. You know, again, my GCal is my life, you know. Yeah. If it's not organized, it's not in GCal, it's not a thing, and it's not
going to happen. Yeah, no, I think, like, I mean, I don't get drunk anymore in Leicester, is my rule. Like, I won't get drunk in Leicester for many reasons. One, because people know me in Leicester, because it's a small place. I don't want people I know to see me drunk. And two, because I'm in Leicester most of the time, so it's a good rule to have, don't get drunk in Leicester. But it does mean that when I do go down to London,
it's on.
It's on. And it's on from the moment we hit the champagne bar at St. Pank.
Yeah.
I get on the train, have my fizzy water, cleanse the body, get to Circe's, and then it's on.
Yeah.
And then I go from there to Soho, and then Soho House, or Little Italy. And then, yeah, get busy with it with Pete. Pete's a good guy to go out with. He's a fun time. And we'll go and see some mates sometimes, if I'm feeling particularly sociable. But yeah, I think, you know, apart from that, keeping a good lifestyle is quite important. And I think the older you get, the more important it is. Like, I mean, when I used to work, I remember the first time I got a paying job, I was like, right, after this, we're going out and we're getting hammered. And then I started getting jobs more often, but we carried on. And I'm like, oh, this is getting a bit expensive. Let's get beers in the studio. We'll have beers after the shoot, because we're above a bar, which was always a bad decision for me. But then we started shooting every day. And at one point I realized we're having beers every day. I was like, we can no longer celebrate every job.
Yeah.
It's not going
to
work.
This is when you start instructing your clients to come up via the fire exit, not through the bar.
Yeah. So yeah, then it was only after like new jobs or big jobs. But now we shoot rarely. So now after every job, it is beer o'clock.
Yeah, and you're not above a pub anymore. You're on an industrial estate.
Yeah, so. Though I have now got a giant beer fridge, which we stock for each shoot, which is currently empty, which is sad from the last one. And I get an Uber in on shoot days so I can have my beers.
Yes.
No drinking and driving on this job. And clients always like a beer afterwards as well.
Yeah.
They always like have a nice selection of like juicy IPAs, lagers and
it's kind of like an average gig, you know, it's like... The drummer's left packing his stuff away while everyone else at the bar getting hammered.
Yeah, you're busy editing off. Whilst we're getting sloshed. But yeah, now, the last thing I want to touch on is 2024 and how to salvage this year, because it's been a bad year for most people in the industry. And every year, so I split my year into quarters. And as far as I'm concerned, you have three functional quarters per year, because something always goes wrong. And it can be a house. It's not necessarily wrong in terms of in your life goes wrong, but like you might move house. There might be a pandemic. Like I don't think we can underestimate the chance of something going wrong. And this year's been a really bad one. So the year started good. I got a puppy and I took 2 months off work. I was like, don't matter. It's, you know, I've got 1 month in lieu. Then there was an election. That's my quarter gone. Then my dad died. That was another 2 months gone. So now I've lost more than my fair share of the year. So I've got to pull my year around financially because I've spent more than I usually spend. I've made less than I usually make and I've done very little. So I've now got from August until December, I think it's December the 10th is my financial year, to claw back this deficit.
Yeah, the missing months.
Now, in all fairness, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll be fine regardless. But I'm competitive and I don't like to have a year worse than the previous one. So I need to make more money. I'm going to make a considerable chunk of change. There's not a small number I need to make up here. And I have a plan. I have a very clear, concise plan of action. And I'm going to share it with everybody because maybe people can copy it and go, oh, I'm going to do the same. So, numero uno, I am going to go back to 2 YouTube videos a week because that brings in more money. Mm-hmm. That's an easy starting one. Let's crack on with that. So 1 podcast, 1 video every week. And if I have time, I do 2 videos and 1 podcast because it doesn't really take that long to do the videos. These take longer, especially with the edit and renders. That's the first thing I'm going to do. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make an absolute monstrous workshop, which is what you'll be helping me film in 2 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge lighting workshop. I did one before and I did some like off branches and there was no cohesion between them. The How to Light Things or Lighting 101 is a good workshop. I'm going to build on that as a starting point, but I'm going to redo that bit anyway because I can do a better job of it now. And I actually know some stuff I didn't know before. But then we're going to go into real detail and everything. I'm going to make a huge workshop that is very time heavy, but I've got to commit the time really because I need to make the money back.
Good.
I've just said yes to a load of sponsorship deals, which I don't know. I said no to more than I said yes to, but I said yes to more than I normally would do. So I feel like I've sold out a little bit. But
I think to make it clear that Fanta isn't one of those.
Yeah, Fanta is not one of our sponsors. But Fanta, if you want to sponsor my podcast, get on it. We'll also be looking for a sponsor for the podcast because it currently doesn't make money. I don't know if you've seen the AdSense we get from YouTube for these.
I haven't seen that.
I'll pull them up whilst we're here. It's not pretty. Yeah, it's not pretty, but if we go into YouTube Studio, I'll just pull up the last one. Here's one. Analytics. So this podcast here, that one got demonetized because I said the C word at some point in it without realizing.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can't say that. Let's look at this one. This is really interesting for everyone just watching this and hearing nothing, seeing nothing and hearing this. Okay. We made £36 from 3 hours work.
Oh, that's a lot of cash.
So podcast, so we need a sponsor to come on board with these. We'll start a new season, I think, when we do that. Season 2. I'll be actively looking for a sponsor. I'm going to be approaching brands. That's on the YouTube side of things. On the photography side of things, I need to start marketing my work and I need to bring in a new portrait portfolio. There's a job recently that I lost and I could have done it, but I had no proof that I could do it. So that's got to come in. I've got to do a whole heap of test shooting. I'm talking once a week. I'm going to have to absolutely hustle the hell out of it and create some really exciting, interesting work. I'm going to have to call in every favor from every brand, modeling agency, makeup, everyone I know. I'm going to be like pulling in favors just to try and pull this together in the hope that by the end of the year, so we've got August, so that's dead. September, I've got to go to Spain in September and New York. October, November, December, I've got 3 months to do 6 months work and hopefully pull it around in that time frame. So there'll be a lot of work being produced, which is good for you guys. There'll be more YouTube content, better YouTube content, because the better the content, the more money it makes. And I'm building a new studio at the same time. So it's going to be a frantic end to the year.
Yeah, you'll be busy for sure.
Well, I'll definitely be busy. You might have to bring in some more staff during the week just to help us get it all done because there is a limit to what one person can do. But yeah, that's kind of my plan to try and turn the year around. Now, some of it is really easy because if I make more YouTube videos, I make more money. That's a simple like sum. Yeah. It's very difficult to guarantee getting a big ad campaign.
Yeah, there's no guarantees in that.
No, I can do everything in my power and maybe get nothing. But luckily, because I'm tight, I don't have to worry so much about the money because I didn't spend it all. Because I didn't buy a Mac Studio.
There is some cash in the coffers.
Yeah, I'm still using the same monitor I bought in 2016, even though it probably needs replacing at some point soon. And that was only a £700 monitor. It wasn't an ISO. Because yes, ISOs are better, but so is not like... And this is why I don't spend money. A lot of people in my position right now, after the year I've had, would be in deep doo-doo. But because I'm tight, I'm not. I can carry on this year. I can sack it off and be okay. I'm not going to sack it off and be okay. I'm going to work hard and try and make it as the same success of every other year. But I could just sack it off. And if I had bought... I should probably work this out at some point, but I reckon if I added up, if I'd bought the best of everything like everyone thinks I should, that I would now currently be stressed.
You'd have no money left.
Yeah, there'd be nothing in the coffers. There'd be a lot of bills, a lot of debt.
And a few moths.
Yeah. And there's something to be said, especially if you're trying to be creative, about not stressing about money. That doesn't mean not having loads of money, but the easiest way to be rich is to spend less.
Hmm.
If your cost of living is low, then... relatively, you're rich.
It's a recurring theme in these, is know your costs and manage them appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the reason I'm currently not pooping my pants. But it could have been very different had I have spent very differently. But yeah, I don't know. You'll be along for the ride. You'll be helping me with the edits.
Indeed, you know. It's, and I think it's a good advert for the difference between being reactive and proactive. If you know your year's not going well, you're going to sit there and moan that your year's not going well and say, well, what could I have done? Many things.
Many things. There's always something you can do.
Even to the point of, you know, pulling in a few favours here and then, making a conscious attempt to market yourself maybe differently or more often, whatever the case. So, you know, try and put yourself back out there in the ether. You know, things like, obviously, look at what your income streams are. If one of them is something like YouTube... Well, if that's making me money, why don't we just do more of that? While we're working on the stuff in the background, waiting for that ad campaign to land.
I mean, if there's no ad campaigns coming in, I could do a daily YouTube video. Like, I've got enough ideas. I've been continually writing the ideas down. I've just not had time. I don't think I've made a YouTube video since early June. The one that went out last week, I filmed, edited in a day just to put out, just to get one out there. I filmed another one the other day, which is going out tomorrow or last week for people who listen to this, actually. And then there's no more content. So on Monday, I've got to film 10, 15 videos back to back and just crack on with them, get them done, get them out there and start scheduling them up again, get it all like...
Exactly. I mean, and then potentially, you know, you've got sort of 15 videos that's basically a month's worth of content.
Yeah.
Done in a day. What that one day now, it releases you from that for the rest of the month to do other things.
Yeah. Or I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to film 3 months of one video a week content, schedule all of that. And then if I do have time... put extra videos up in between it because there's nothing worse than going, I've ran out of content for YouTube. What on earth am I going to do? I'm stacked for the next 2.5 months. So I'll get that one a week done. The podcast will get sorted. We're going to have some guests on soon because I think you're going to show me how to do that.
Yep.
And I've got some good ones teed up. I've got the top Digitech in the world. I've got some great top photographers who've done some great things, really interesting careers. I've got some photographers I represent, some future talents as well, some young people, young folks.
Star on the rise.
Star on the rise that I'd really like to talk to on this. But yeah, I don't know, I guess that kind of wraps up this episode though, I think.
Yeah. So I think that's the takeaway is, yes, it's gloomy.
Yeah, it is pretty gloomy.
But, you know, don't just accept it, you know, be proactive. And look at what you can do to improve that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will be, you know, there's also other stuff. I'm doing agent work, more just of a cash
maker. Many fingers and many pies.
Got to have your fingers in your pies. But yeah, we'll see how it all goes. And I think I'm off to New York to meet some friends as well about this other company I'm going to set up. I can't just sit there and be like, well, this is what I do. Let's hope for the best.
Many do, though. That's the problem.
Many go bust. But yeah. Anyway, on that cheery note of absolute fear and failure, I'll leave you all to it and I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Right.